First of all, I'm going to go over a little bit about what anonymity services are. Roger spoke this morning about remailers in depth, so I'm going to breeze through this quickly. If you're more interested, you can go back and read his notes. When we talk about network anonymity services, what we mean are systems which hide the identity of the user, they hide other factors which could be used to identify him, and they separate the user's actions with his true name or his meatspace identity. However, they don't hide the fact that these actions take place. If you want to hide that these things are taking place, you need applications like steganography. If you want to hide what's being done, use encryption. Anonymity just separates the identity of the user with what's going on. It was up a minute ago. Well, it looks like we don't have slides. Okay. Okay. I'm going to keep talking. Let's see if we can get the slides back. If not, you'll just have to listen to me. Anonymity is not the same as content privacy. So you need to add in other applications to protect what's being done from being seen. There are different types of anonymity services. I divide them into two main categories, covert anonymity and overt anonymity. In covert anonymity, the user isn't necessarily identified as being an anonymous user. He fits in with the rest of the crowd of non-anonymous users. This sometimes gives the person more credibility because he's not flagged as somebody who's hiding something. It doesn't necessarily attract suspicion. And covert anonymity is beneficial for that reason. It's also harder to get. Certain examples are inconspicuous web proxies, using free webmail, hotmail accounts that you've connected to through an anonymous SSL proxy that hides your IP address. Also, systems like Peekabooty, which has been discussed here at DEF CON before. In overt anonymity, the user, of course, is known to be an anonymous user. Its credibility is sometimes questioned. Examples are like known anonymous remailers. If you have mail coming from a server which is known to be an anonymous remailer, obviously that user is an anonymous user. Anonymizer.com addresses, the domain name gives it away there. Other services tend to be a mixture between the two. So my next slide says, who operates public anonymity services? We have commercial organizations, which often provide anonymity for profit. They, of course, have a vested interest in protecting their users' identities because that's the basis of their business. They don't usually offer really strong anonymity. The main issue are payment hurdles, and you just listened to Ryan talk about the bright future of eCash. I claim that anonymous digital cash is never going to work for purchasing anonymity services. Thank you. Examples of commercial organizations which offer this sort of thing are Anonymizer.com and formerly Zero Knowledge Systems. They still offer some anonymity services, but they are, again, not strong anonymity services. Other vendors of anonymity services are universities and nonprofit organizations. They offer the services usually for the good of the community or to implement theoretical concepts which they want to see if they actually work. They want to go through the exercise of developing a new way of doing technology, and part of that is putting it to the test. Often, particularly with the NGOs, they have a specific need for anonymity services and offer this to the public because, as was discussed at a talk at Black Hat, if you're going to run an anonymity service, you need to have all sorts of users. You can't just run an anonymity service for only human rights workers in Guatemala because while you might not know which one it is, you know that somebody using this is a human rights worker in Guatemala. Everybody has to use your anonymity service. I'll talk more about anonymity sets in a bit. But universities and NGOs have the benefit there that they can avoid the problem of receiving payment since they're giving it away, and that takes a whole lot of the hassle out of offering anonymity services. Examples are MIT's NIM server, nim.alias.net, which is a type 1 remailer NIM server. And Voice of America is doing a partnership with a well-known anonymity vendor to provide internet access proxies in China to help the oppressed Chinese citizens get around the government firewall, which I hear rumors, I don't know if this is true, but it's funded by our lovely patriotic Cisco Corporation. Yay, freedom. Individuals. They are probably the number one provider of anonymity services, and this poses a lot of problems for the people running these services, but we have individual remailer operators and web proxy administrators. I operate a remailer. Their motivations are much the same as NGOs. They believe strongly in the right to anonymity. They often desire personal use of the technology, and they know that somebody's got to run this stuff, and if it's not being run, they can't use it. They wish to demonstrate their technical ability. They want to design new systems or show that they can be operated. They want to put theory into practice, and they get a benefit out of it because a lot of the systems have built into them ways that you can have nodes which are not trustworthy, but as long as you have a certain number of trustworthy nodes, you're safe. If you're running one, presumably you trust yourself. Examples, there are Mixmaster remailers and, Freenet, if it worked. Governments and militaries. That might be surprising to some people, but they have needs for anonymous tip lines. I had a fellow from some government or military organization come to me at Black Hat and say he was interested in setting up a tips website for his branch of the military and wanted to know if he could link it into the public remailer system. This benefits them. The system's already there. People trust it. They get information. They need anonymity themselves for doing investigations or doing espionage. And again, you have the problem that you can't operate the CIA-only remailer. If only CIA agents are using it, then it's obviously CIA agents. It doesn't matter which one it is, you know that it's a CIA agent. They have their own motives. They wish to undermine foreign government policies, perhaps, which is goes back to the Voice of America program. We have SafeWeb, which is funded by InQtel. So there's major differences between the commercial anonymity and the others, and this is largely due to the fact that anonymous digital cash is a fantasy. Commercial anonymity services tend to be weaker. Lots of factors that cause that. They tend to be more popular as well, mainly for the same reasons. They address passive concerns. You want to protect your financial data from somebody who's going to steal your credit cards. You want to hide personal information so that DoubleClick doesn't sell it to every Viagra marketing house out there. Thwarting data mining is a big thing. Actually, communicating anonymously is a secondary concern, usually. So, I'm really upset my slides aren't showing up, but commercial anonymity is largely difficult because it's really hard to sell. You have no way of collecting payment anonymously. There is no current anonymous digital cash system, and I can, at the end, if people are interested, I can talk about why I don't think it'll ever happen. The cost of operating these services is immense. Zero Knowledge shut down their wonderful freedom system because bandwidth costs for them were just not justifiable by the amount of users they had. You need a very large anonymity set in order to have strong anonymity. If you have only a few people using it, you give out information about who you are just by what you're doing, and people can take educated guesses as to who you are. there's not a real certain demand for commercial anonymity either. It's hard to get VC funding for this. It's hard to actually get investors. There's possible legal restrictions on running a service which lets people do what they want without having any kind of accountability. And once you get through those legal restrictions and work all that out with your lawyers, then you have to set up a system to deal with abuse, because there will be some abuse. There is always abuse in any kind of network service, but with anonymity, it's harder to deal with. It's also hard to buy these systems. If you need strong anonymity, you can't go and purchase it without giving up your name. Certain companies like Anonymizer.com accept money orders or cash in the mail. That's fairly good, but still not at the level of security that some people want. With the types of anonymity that commercial organizations provide, you're often not certain of the strength of the system. If it's a trust us system like Anonymizer provides, where you basically just believe on the strength of their word that they're not going to be logging what websites you're hitting through their web proxy, you may take that, and that may work for your threat model, but if you can't verify it yourself, you may not want to risk your life on it. Availability of service is another issue. You don't know if you're going to be able to get at it all the time or get at it at any time in the future. If you set up an email address through one of these systems and it gets shut down, you potentially have a lot of problems there. Local network restrictions also are an issue. If there's a wonderful onion routing system open up to the public out on the net and anybody can use it, then it's great, but you're behind a corporate firewall or a government firewall and you can't get to it, well, too bad for you. Ease of use, which is probably the biggest issue in any kind of privacy or anonymity concern, is these things are really hard to use. People do not want to, and by really hard to use, I mean they don't want to click three more times when they're sending an email. They don't want to have to understand these concepts. They want to type, send, and be safe. And that's just hard to do. We are years behind our technical ability when it comes to user interface design. So the differences between these strengths of services, you have weak anonymity, which provides protection against the casual attacker. It's very good for spam avoidance. If you wanted to post through a Hotmail account and have your real name and you didn't ever really receive mail there, that protects your identity. If you wanted to throw in no spam somewhere in your domain name, that's extremely weak anonymity, but it hides you from the spammers until the spam bots understand how to read and take that out. Examples are anonymous online forums like the Anonymous Cowards on Slashdot. With weak anonymity, you either trust the operator to protect you or you trust the laws to protect the operator from giving you up. Laws can change and operators can screw you over. Strong anonymity. I define this as services which provide protection from ISP snooping. There's probably sysadmins in the room, and some of you have probably been bored late at night reading love letters of your customers and gotten a kick out of that. You know who you are. Shame on you. If you don't like that happening, well, this protects you from that. It protects you from government monitoring. Big Brother can't really get at what you're doing. You're hidden from stronger adversaries. It also provides protection in the case of server compromise, as well as subpoenas. You can't protect against server compromise without also protecting against subpoenas or court orders. There's no way to do one and not the other. If you're running a system and you're honest, the laws prevent you from giving things up, but a hacker breaks in and takes it, too bad for your customers. With strong anonymity, you trust the mathematics. There, of course, could be a flaw found in the system that shoots everything to hell, but you're not relying on the good of an individual or the strength of a law. Examples of this, on the weak scale, we have free webmail accounts, you have SSL anonymous proxies, you get anonymous ISPs. Back in 97, 98, you could walk into your local neighborhood ISP, pay cash for a shell account, and they wouldn't ask you your name. Now, Earthlink's buying everything up and competing with AOL as to who gets the most number of coasters out in the market, but you can still find ways to get ISP accounts that don't have your name attached to them. It's just harder. There's also, as I said, Anonymizer, which this is their niche. Anonymous mail relays. Well, that can be anything from an open relay that confuses your return address to an open header stripping proxy, which I believe Roger mentioned earlier. And then I'm going to talk about mail here, so I'm not going to get into onion routers or anything like that, but strong anonymity, we have mixed net systems. So I've discussed why commercial anonymity is difficult to do. I'm now going to talk about the need for free anonymity. Strong anonymity has very important uses. There are many cases where there are people in, as I said, oppressed countries which need to get information out, or people who are in communities which frown upon discussion of certain taboo issues, and they want to be able to discuss it without their reputation or their jobs or other things being jeopardized. Commercial solutions are lacking in this kind of assurance that these people need. The main sources of publicly accessible nonprofit anonymity services are anonymity services. Strong anonymity services are provided by nonprofit anonymity servers. I'm reading quickly here. Anonymous digital cash, of course, would change this if the Tooth Fairy brought it to us under our pillows, but it's not going to happen. I'm going to give you a quick, brief history of remailers that's going to duplicate a bit of what Roger said. How many people here went to Roger's talk? Can I get a show of hands? Okay, I'll go quickly through this. MixNet's idea came up in 1981 in a paper by David Chaum in the ACM, described a method of anonymous communication. There's no universally trusted authority. You have individual nodes which are not all necessarily trusted. Chaum mentioned return addresses in his system, and he did not actually implement this. Years later, the internet boom was taking off, and there was a remailer hosted out of WizVax by a woman named Steffi, and she started this off allowing people to post to alt-sex bondage using an anonymous mail forwarder that stripped off your headers, and then opened it up to other news groups like Alt Abuse and a few others. Ended up shutting down this because it was too expensive to run. Carl Kleinpace picked up this idea, wrote a system for a pseudonym server, which was not a strong pseudonym server. It kept a database of correlation between real email addresses and your anonymous email addresses. Wrote this thing, decided not to run it, gave it to a fellow in Finland who was Ulf Helsingius, operated it in the early 1990s. It was fairly weak anonymity. It was very easy to use. It had millions of users because of the ease of use. And it worked, and it was reliable. Actually, it may have been more like 500,000 users. But it ended up falling victim to a legal attack from the Church of Scientology. Somebody posted super secret, we are descended from clams, we don't want anybody to know messages, and they sicked their infinite lawyers with their infinite amount of money on them and got the Finnish government to have the Penant.fi people hand over the information. So they shut down their system because they didn't want this to continue to happen. Note also that it could have been vulnerable to somebody hacking in and getting the entire database. On the CD of my slides, there's a URL here with his press release that talks about why he shut it down. Simultaneously to Penant running, a group of Bay Area cryptographers and mathematicians developed remailer systems which were a partial implementation of David Chaum's work. Eric Hughes and Hal Finney were the guys that did this. They wrote in 1992 a system which Roger discussed with you. I'm not going to talk about the technical details. It was sort of weak. It started getting heavy on features. A few other people added systems in there where you could artificially induce latency at certain hops as determined by you. And it used PGP for the nesting and encryption. Traffic analysis, of course, was still possible, as I'm sure Roger talked about, because of the change in size and not everything being fixed size that they're moving through the hops. These were known as Type 1 remailers. They're still in use because the Type 1 NIM servers still exist, and there are no Type 2 NIM servers. There are Type 2 remailers. These are the Mixmaster remailers. They are a more complete implementation of Chom's ideas. Work on them was begun in 1993 by Lance Cottrell, who is now the president of Anonymizer.com. They address a lot of the shortcomings in the Type 1 system. The software that we have now was rewritten in 1998 by Alf Mueller and is now maintained by me. It's currently the most widely used remailer software out there. Mixmaster, the application, supports Type 1 as well. I have a slide in here about zero knowledge that discusses it being shut down and the fact that it has now been open sourced. I'm going to breeze over that. I'm also going to skip over the technical aspects of this because Roger talked about how Mixmaster works. And I'm going to get straight to the abuse issues. So I guess I should give you a 30-second rundown of how Mixmaster works. You have messages which are composed by somebody using Mixmaster client. They are then encrypted in multiple layers to the keys of the hops that you select that you want your mail to be sent through before they hit the final destination. The innermost message has the address of who you want the mail to be sent to, and then they're wrapped sort of like the little Russian dolls which you pull out, except that magically these end up being all the same size because as they're sent through the remailer system, they're padded to meet the right size. If you write a message that's too large, it's split. If you write a message that's too small, it's padded. Everything going to the system is a fixed size. You have a 10K allowance for messages, and with the headers, they turn out to be 30K. When they hit each node, they go into a pool, and then they are random. Messages coming in are dumped in the pool. Messages coming out are randomly pulled out of the pool. It's like throwing paper into a hat, shaking it, pulling it out. That way, somebody cannot be watching the entire system and observe messages one for one coming in and out, as they could with the Type 1 systems. Long and short of it is, if you're running a remailer as a remailer operator, it's pretty much impossible to tell who's sending what where. This makes it really hard to shut down people's accounts or prevent them from sending mail if they're doing things that are bad with it. We get into types of abuse now. When I talk about remailer abuse, the one thing that everybody asks you about off the bat is, and I don't know why this is the most concerning social problem today, but they say, well, what about spam? Are we going to get spam through your remailers? Spam is a really, remailers are a really bad application for sending spam because they are high latency. It's easy to detect somebody spamming. This standard ploy for sending spam, when I was in the ISP business, at least, it may have changed now, but you'd set up a recipient box on Hotmail, and you'd collect your responses to your deal for getting a 19-inch penis, and you'd pump out millions of messages out all over the internet, and you'd have a window of 3 hours before Hotmail shut your account down, but you'd get a whole bunch of suckers who wanted their magic wand. Well, the mail gets hung up in the remailer system. It's not instantaneous. So by the time, you know, the first complaint comes in, you lose your account, and you're going to miss a lot of customers, and they're going to be very disappointed. So open relays are still a big problem out there, and they're still much better. This may change if open relays go away, but you can still find them in China. Usenet spam. That's still a problem, because the whole game changes when you're posting to Usenet. You reach a huge audience with one shot. It's an issue we still have to deal with. We can also tell when somebody's spamming because they're usually sending a whole lot of almost identical messages in, and we can sort them as they're being decrypted, about to be sent out to the last hop. We do comparisons using hashes, which don't change very much when the messages don't change very much. Next question people ask me about is piracy. Well, is the latest Adobe ebook reader going to be put on, I can't mention that in DEF CON. Is the latest whatever going to be put out on the net through remailers? Well, most remailers block binary transfers because there are a number of reasons why it's a bad idea to send binary messages through the Remailer network. So you could send out whatever wares you want, and it just wouldn't reach the destination. When you're sending large packets, as I said, things are split and sent out. If you have a global adversary watching the entire network traffic, now apparently people think that these things exist. I'm not certain, but assuming somebody could watch the entire traffic and view Remailers as black boxes, they would see you take a 100 megabyte message, break it down into 10K chunks, send out all these messages, and then they'd watch just the whole thing and wait a little bit, and then they'd see all these messages coming out, being posted, and they'd go, gotcha. You're not really hiding yourself that way. Email is not a really reliable medium for file transfer, and frankly, the wares traders that I've heard of are perfectly happy with IRC, throwaway shell accounts, the latest peer-to-peer system. People have to do a better job of tracking down on those things before they're going to go to the less efficient and harder to use Remailer network. The abuse that bothers me most is not spam or wares, it's targeted harassment. When somebody has somebody else gunning for them and hiding behind a Remailer network, it's usually abusive messages directed at individuals, or the more clever, floods from multiple Remailers. If you try to flood somebody's mailbox through a single Remailer, we detect that because we see the flood coming in. If you try to send a flood, please don't anybody do this, by the way, a flood at one person's mailbox using 40 different Remailers that all dump out at the same time, we only see a few messages coming through every hour from each individual Remailer, but the person at the end gets it all at once. From the abuse complaints I've gotten, the number one reason for this is Usenet flame wars. People get on Usenet and, you know, your mama's a hoe and all this stuff going back and forth, and it's all fine. They seem to like it. I guess it's just their thing. But as soon as somebody goes and uses an anonymous Remailer, they've broken the code of flaming on Usenet, and everybody gets upset. So often it's problems that they can just solve by being less of an ass themselves on Remailers, though, or on Usenet, though there are cases where the abuse is genuine and we have ways of protecting people from that. My next slide says prevention. Stopping abuse. Each individual Remailer keeps a block list of addresses for people who do not want to receive mail from that Remailer. If you get abuse through the Remailer, you respond to the abuse address, which is listed in your headers of that mail, and there's an automated system where you can add yourself to be blocked, or you can talk to the Remailer operator, and he can block all the addresses you don't want to receive mail. There is also a Remailer-wide Remailer abuse block list, which various Remailers share, so people can enter their information into one central source. Note that all Remailers don't use this, so you still have to get the ones that aren't using it. You can resort to local filtering in your email client, have it discard abusive messages coming in from these Remailers. You never see it, mail still gets there, but it's not concerning you anymore. The key thing with this is you don't need to know the identity of the person doing the abuse in order to stop the abuse from being received by the person being abused. You just need to know what address should never receive mail again. Note that the sender of whatever he's sending doesn't know that his mail hasn't gotten through. There are spam and flood detection tools, as I mentioned. NILSIMSA is the spam hash tool, which is on your CDs. If you want to avoid the problem of abuse as a Remailer operator yourself, you can run your Remailer in middleman mode. This is a way that you set up your Remailer so that it never sends mail to anybody but other Remailers. You're still providing a Remailer in the mix, but it's not an exit hop, so you're not going to get abuse complaints. These are not nearly as useful as exit hop Remailers because that limits the number of exit hops that a global adversary would have to watch, making it easier for them to do long-term intersection attacks, which was talked about at Black Hat. So, a quick question. Yes?
If the response to abuse is to stop receiving anonymous email, doesn't that open up a denial of service attack? Simply arrange for
At that point, you'd have to make the call, do I want to receive anonymous mail or not? That's up to the individual. Usually the people that get abused through anonymous remailers and care about it are people who don't know what anonymous remailer is before they write a nasty letter to the remailer operator. The more concerning part is, can somebody forge a request saying I was abused and please block me, when really that's not the person who's asking to be blocked? I can talk about that more at the end. I'm going to talk now about why remailer operators can't reveal abusers' true names. This should be fairly obvious, but it still isn't to many people who have to investigate this sort of stuff. If you're on the other side, you're getting abused through emailers, you have a message which says something nasty in the body and has a header which shows that it came from the last remailer. It doesn't have any information in it about other remailers it may have come through or what the original sending origin was. There are usually no logs on remailer systems, mainly because they get way too big. I process thousands of messages a day, and my logs just fill up, and they're not useful, so I don't keep them. I also don't keep them because I have normal shell users on my system, and I wouldn't want their information mixed in with the remailer information if it ever had to become public. You don't know the chain that the sender of this message picked, so you don't know the other remailers. If you went to the final destination and seized the server in order to get the keys of it, well, you would first of all need the encrypted message in order to have something to decrypt, and secondly, when you decrypted it, you'd get the plain text, which you already have, so that's just pointless. You would need to get all of the chain hops and have all of the encrypted messages and get all of the keys and decrypt everything, and then you could see the whole path back to the beginning. But a lot of remailers use StarTLS, which is an encryption link-to-link over SMTP that we configure to use femoral Diffie-Hellman encryption. So it's a one-time key. It's discarded. You have forward secrecy. So now you have the encrypted text, and the key doesn't exist to decrypt it anymore. You're out of luck. I discuss why we don't keep logs. Well, what I just said there is very useful to know, because inevitably you're going to have somebody complaining to you saying, I was always told that everything on the internet leaves a footprint and you've got to have ways of tracking this. There's always logs. There's always IP addresses. Nothing is truly anonymous. Explaining this to individuals, usually they get that. Often telling individuals why you're running the remailer and why it's a good service gets them off your back. As long as they know this isn't just something you've set up so that people can harass individually them, they'll back off. Responding to organizations is sometimes trickier. You're usually dealing with the abuse desk person who's used to beating up spammers, and most anti-spammer people are hotheads, so it gets into a little bit messier. But suggestion I usually make to organizations if they're getting a lot of abuse through emailers is that once I verify that they're really from that organization, I can block the entire organization from receiving remailers. If you're an organization like a police force, you probably don't want to block remailers from getting to your people, because there may be legitimate people sending you information through the remailers that you'll never get and they'll never know you didn't get. My suggestion on that side is deal with the mail servers on your side. If you don't want getting to your individual people, have mail from certain remailers redirected to an account that's sorted through for legitimate mail. ISPs will call you up and say, there's something bad going on here, stop it, you're spamming us, whatever. Explaining to them what you're doing usually also placates them. If it's your ISP, it's trickier because they can pull the plug on you. Generally, running a remailer that's not in the NLAN mode on a DSL line will get your account pulled very quickly, because you're paying $60 a month and they're getting some of your abuse complaints and it's not worth it to them. If you have a leased line link, you're paying more money and you sort things out. Always be friendly with your own upstream's abuse handling team so that they know what's going on, and always promptly deal with abuse yourself, because Then they can trust you to take care of it and just forward it off to you. The really difficult abuse problem is when some legal authority comes to your house, comes to your place of work, hunts you down and says, you've been sending death threats, you've been abusing these people, you're in trouble. It's much harder dealing with your average legal authority because most of the time they don't understand what mixed nets are. They don't have the level of technical savvy that you do when you're running a remailer, and they expect that, well, you're running an anonymity service, but you've got to have the logs. We know that this is how the internet works. Explain to them what you're doing, why it's beneficial, and often explain to them that it's beneficial to them as well. You can put things into perspective and let them know that you are doing service and there are other legitimate uses besides harassing the next-door neighbor. The biggest problem with dealing with abuse, the most abuse I get, is abuse that's sent to Usenet, as I said before. Usenet just brings out the immaturity in all of us, and it's, you know, if remailers could send mail to IRC, things would be worse, but we have to settle with Usenet headaches. You can turn off your mail to news gateway and you have 90% of your abuse go away. However, I also think that probably 90% of the legitimate use for discussing interesting topics that you don't want your identity known happens on Usenet. So you're cutting out a lot of your users if you cut out a lot of your abuse. They come hand in hand. So let's talk about law enforcement more. When the cop or the Fed or whoever comes to you and says, we've got this email message, somebody's harassed, we want to know answers, they're doing their job. They've been given harassment, they've got a case, they've got to solve it, they want to know who the perp was and they want to prosecute him. You can't help them. This frustrates them. They don't like not being helped. You have a window here of time when you are either a good guy or a bad guy. I've noticed that it's really hard to get yourself out of whichever camp you're initially put into. So you want to offer as much help as you can. Unfortunately, it's not very much, but you can make suggestions that, well, if this official is getting harassed through the remailers, while unfortunately I can't tell you who it is that's doing this harassment, I can block him from receiving it. I can make this problem go away. No, I can't help you get the guy who is doing it, even though I wish I could, but I can make it stop. You also might want to explain that there are other remailers that you don't control, and if he really wants it to stop, he should contact all, or the agent or whoever should contact all of them and make it stop. Discussing the abuse countermeasures is a big issue. The first step, I guess, is actually explaining that you're running a remailer. If they come to you and they don't know that you're running a remailer, they're probably going to think that you're the one who sent it if they trace it back that far to you. My remailer, for instance, does not say in the, you know, it sends out mail and it has a from address because all mail has to have a from address. And it says the username is amelon. Well, amelon sometimes is, you know, the FBI goes looking for amelon. Well, it's, if I had the name anonymous user, they would get that quicker. So the more overt the anonymity, the easier it is on you when you have to explain, hey, I'm just running an anonymity service. I'm not the bad guy. If you end up being treated as a suspect, it's usually most likely due to technical ignorance on the part of the person investigating. They're not haters of free speech or anonymity. They just don't have the knowledge that of how these things work and exactly what you can and can't do. So they think you're hedging and telling them only some of what you know. You need to remember your Miranda rights if it gets that far. You don't have to talk to the law enforcement. You can tell them, I'm a suspect, I'm not going to talk to you. I will help you if you're going to treat me reasonably as a provider, but I get to decide what I say. last resort, if you find yourself in jail for some reason, there's the EFF, there's the ACLU, there's EPIC. There are organizations which protect anonymity on the net, they protect free speech, and they protect the people that operate these services. So first impressions are a big thing. You want to make sure that, as I said, you don't end up in the bad guy camp. When you're operating a remailer, you have it on a domain name, and that domain name sometimes has a website. I've discovered that certain agencies have employees which don't understand the difference between the web and the net. They don't know the difference between web servers and mail servers. So they think that anybody who uses a remailer has to visit your website. So the first thing they do is they go and look at your website. Now, a little side anecdote here. I came to DEF CON 9. I had been a user of anonymous remailers for several years and never had run one, but I went to a talk by Noise about running remailers, and it got me motivated to set up one myself. Well, at the same time, I had done a little bit of target practice in the desert with some of my friends, and we went out and shot a bunch of watermelons with AR-15s and took pictures and registered the domain name melontraffickers.com and put up our pictures. And so when I decided to run a remailer, it just seemed fitting that I put it up on the domain name I just registered. So the first thing a law enforcement agent sees when they look at abuse from my remailer is a picture of me and a handful of cypherpunks dressed in black out in the Nevada desert with semi-automatic rifles assassinating produce. Had I thought this through, it might not have been wise. On the flip side, there is or was a remailer called the First NAS remailer. It was run off the domain ChicagoFirstNAS.com or .org, and this was run by the Chicago First Church of the Nazarene. You go to their site, and you learn about how Jesus saves you from your sins. Who's going to get in the good guy camp, and who's going to get in the bad guy camp? You want to be able to talk about the benefits of remailers and have information about them that's from third parties on hand. So when an FBI agent shows up at your door and says, what do we have going on here? You can point him to third-party information that will allow him to learn about this stuff quickly and understand what's going on. You want to be friendly with your local law enforcement. They can help you. Cops respect cops. If you can have somebody on your local police force who knows what remailers are, knows how this stuff works, and knows who you are, knows you're not a terrorist, if you can say, call this guy, he'll tell you what's going on, that'll help you out. They're not going to trust you right off the bat. And I shouldn't have to say this, but if you're going to run a remailer, please don't be a criminal. I had somebody come up to me at a party I was at, and he started, he recognized my name, and he started talking about how much of a fan of Mixmaster he was, and he hadn't ever used it yet, but he was interested in it, and oh, by the way, he's involved with a major wares trading ring. I said, no, thanks, I don't have anything to do with wares, I don't want you to have anything to do with me, and by the way, remailers are probably bad for you for all the reasons I already mentioned. But anonymity is not necessarily, especially now, viewed as a very good thing. There's people who are on the fence about it. Yes, it's good in these cases, it's bad in these cases, and while that's true, we don't want to swing the balance to anonymity is bad. If you are running a remailer and you get busted for running a kiddie porn ring, even if they're not connected to each other, the press is going to tie those two together because the press people are slimy bastards. Sorry. It's a living. You have to sell whatever newspapers you're selling, but it's a great story. Remailer operator caught in pedophile ring. Don't let that happen. If you're going to be a kiddie porn trafficker, don't want a remailer, I don't want to talk to you. There was, the website RaiseTheFist.com. the guy that was hosting that had a bunch of anti-government rants on there, which are perfectly legal since the First Amendment still exists. But he was, well, I still think it does. He was also accused of breaking into various company servers elsewhere, and he was arrested for hacking. But what did we hear about? Well, the guy that runs Raise the Fist was raided because of bad things he said. No, he was raided for other reasons, but issues get confused. So I can talk a little bit about my personal experiences. I already mentioned how I became... Okay, quickly. I did not expect lots of abuse. I did not expect lots of excitement when I was running a Raymailer. I talked to the guy who wrote Mixmaster originally, Lance Cottrell, later, and he said that in the 6 years of running Raymailer, he never got any law enforcement communication whatsoever. Well, 3 months after I set up my Raymailer, I got a phone call from the FBI. They had been trying to find me. Apparently, they couldn't find where I was from my mailbox, my post office box. They went to my company, which at the time was PGP, and sat down with my boss, who was ex-military, and asked him whether he thought it was a terrible thing that I was running anonymity services and shouldn't the government be able to track all this stuff. He said, well, this is PGP, you know. We know what we do. The next question they asked him was, well, isn't it bad for kids to have guns? And he was like, well, yeah, I go out every couple months and shoot my M16. They didn't get anywhere with that, but I was wary here. I also was a little bit naive, and I thought that I could go in and sit down and talk about how wonderful anonymous Raymailers are with the FBI people. I went into their office, had a nice chat in the interrogation room with them in the San Jose field office, and didn't get past the websites are different than Raymailers, and I can't help you with the logs, and even if I had logs, I couldn't help you anyway. I finally decided that I had had enough with the grilling, and that if they wanted to do anything more, they'd have to arrest me, which they weren't going to do. And I decided I was going to leave, at which point they served me with a subpoena that said I had to show up in New York and reveal the identity of a melon 3 days ago. So, since I couldn't go back in time to show up in court, I don't have that 7 days device. I ignored the subpoena, which my lawyer said was fine to do, and have only heard from them once more. The flip side of this is I did get a call at one point from the Secret Service, somebody in something similar to the Office of Internet Death Threats. They have a specific desk for this. And when I told him I was running a Raymailer, he asked me what kind. I told him Mixmaster. He says, what version? He knew what I was doing. He understood why. He did ask me, wanted to make sure I wasn't planning a terrorist attack on the nation's melon crop, but I did not feel threatened when I was talking to this guy. He understood what I was doing, where I was coming from, and I think the main difference wasn't that the Secret Service is better than the FBI, it's that the people I was talking to the first time didn't have a firm grasp on the technology. The guy I was talking to the second time obviously knew a whole lot about it. I have slides here where I talk about the legal status of Raymailers, which I'm going to have to probably skip. I want to talk about September 11th. There were a lot of newspaper reports, articles, all sparked off by a nice bit of journalism by a Wired reporter saying that Raymailers were being shut down because terrorists were using them. There is no evidence that terrorists ever used Raymailers. The information we know about terrorists sending email has all been done from public libraries and public access terminals. Raymailers are actually tools against terror. If you want to get tips from people who are scared for their families' lives, you want to have strong anonymity in place. I'm going to have to skip the next slides, and I want to get to questions. If I can get a few questions, is that possible? Quickly. Any questions? No questions. Yes. That would be nice. On my website, I have some facts. Question back there.
What do you do in the case of someone receiving abuse via anonymous emailer to a large organization where possibly the abuse might be directed to their coworkers or their superiors? If you can't can't very well block, for example, if they work in the city of Las Vegas, you don't want to block all addresses in the city of Las Vegas.
Right. In my Black Hat talk, I had a talk trying to educate abuse test people on how to deal with abuse. And the main thing I said was, well, you can't trace them back through the remailer and get who sent it that way. Usually there's a motive behind sending it. Usually you can tell identifying factors by the person's writing style and everything. You need to use other investigative techniques to find out who it is. I can help mitigate this, the abuse, but you're the one who has to solve the crime. And if it's a case of somebody with a personal vendetta, there's a list of suspects. You know that it's probably one of these people. Two more questions. Back there.
Do you think that running a retailer makes you a target for the government, makes you a target for after the FBI or something?
Well, actually, I have on my ass right now a bunch of FBI targets, but that's due to my questionable taste in underwear. They glow in the dark, though, so they're really cool. No, I don't think the FBI is out to get me. I don't think that I have to worry about, you know, watching my phone calls or anything.
No more than any of us.
No more than anyone else. And probably a lot less than many other people. I don't trade wares or kitty porn, as I said. If I did, I would be doing all you a favor and not running remailer. One more question. In the back, all the way back there. In certain cases, I can block Usenet newsgroups. And in certain cases, I have done it. I usually do it for a limited period of time. Often if you shut off posting to a certain newsgroup, and the person posting it knows, so when you're posting these newsgroups, the person sending it does know whether it gets through or not, because they can see it show up. So if they see it stop showing up, they move on to a different remailer, or they just grow up. Usually I look at what newsgroup it is. If it's a newsgroup that there are social benefits for having remailers post, I don't want to block the legitimate users. If it's a newsgroup that has all equestrians, I blocked at one point, because they were talking about riding horses. They didn't have any need for anonymity, and somebody started harassing them. Something about horse riding fetishists. And, so there's newsgroups for that, too, and he probably went there. I still have that one blocked. In the software that I have, you can send an information request to the remailer, and it will tell you a new feature. It will tell you which newsgroups are blocked, so you can know beforehand if your message will get through. I think I'm out of time here, so I'm over. So I'm going to shut up, and feel free to meet me afterwards if you want to ask any questions. Thank you.